Hello, and welcome to the Find Your Best Voice podcast. I'm Craig Price. On today's episode, we speak with singer and teacher Lisa Barksdale. Lisa speaks about growing up singing in her church, how that led her to pursue a career as a singer and teacher, her journey with the McCloskey technique, and how that directed her into a second career as a speech-language pathologist. Let's jump into the conversation. Well, Lisa, thank you for coming on the podcast. You are a treasured friend and colleague and maybe even mentor to me, we can say.
That's really sweet.
I'm thrilled to have you on and share a little bit of your story with our listeners and talk about some of the professional activities that you're involved with. So can you tell us how you first got started with singing and what your earliest memory of singing is?
Sure. I think I've been singing all my life. My earliest memory is leading the line in my kindergarten graduation, singing "You're a Grand Old Flag." And I would say that my dad probably encouraged me the most because he was always singing. There was just music all the time in our lives. He loved making music. He was a physician, but he loved making music and playing music. And so he encouraged me to sing. And then my mother encouraged me to take the lessons. But my dad never stopped us. We sang all the time when I was growing up. So I couldn't help it. And then, you know, most of us, when we sing decently, we get positive feedback. And that makes us want to sing more.
That's true. So is there someone early on, other than your family, maybe, that encouraged you and inspired you to sing?
Sure. So I grew up in a church where that was the main option of activities to do. And from when I was very little, it was a Baptist church, and they had a great graded choir program where you learned a lot about music theory and hymnology and things like that. But also there's a lot of singing involved. And many members of the church were musical and led us through lots of intelligent, I think, music making. It was really fun. But then when I was, I think, in a middle school, our church hired a music director and organist, husband and wife team who had just finished seminary. They were very young, very enthusiastic, and they had ensemble after ensemble. So I got to play in a recorder consort with a mixed generation group of people, which was really fun, and play handbells, and then multiple ensembles. So the organist was female, and she developed a girls' ensemble. So that was very encouraging. We had a 8 to 12 young women singing together all the time. And then she would do musicals with the children and the youth, and he would do the same. We would do musicals. So whatever the latest musical was, and back in that day, it was Celebrate Life. And we did a musical called Bright New Wings, and we would audition for the solos. And so they're very encouraging. And then, of course, church meets every week, so there wasn't always an opportunity to sing. I had a good friend that we did duets very often, and several of my colleagues from that girls' ensemble have gone on to work in universities. One is a theory instructor, and one is an organ professor, one in South Carolina and one in Arkansas. So it's, you know, they really inspired lots of us, and it was really wonderful that they took the time to pour their energy into us and encourage us to be musicians, and some of us professional musicians.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I mean, lots of people get their start in church music programs like that. But to have such a depth of musical training with kind of theory background and kind of things beyond that in the program is really special.
It was very helpful to me when I was seeking to audition for colleges. And I took piano for years, and actually started studying voice when I was 16 with a local teacher. So I was very encouraged, you know, it fed my soul. And then performing at church means a lot to me. I feel like I guess it's a calling in a way. I've always felt like that was an important place for me to share my talent. And I still do that. It's a high priority for me. And I probably, most of my singing is more oratorio related. Just singing in worship services. Last week I sang at a chapel that you get to sing in too, in North Carolina. It was wonderful. It's a beautiful outdoor chapel place. And yeah. They were very gracious, and, it was a wonderful experience. So I really enjoy sharing, kind of what I believe as, I sing. It's very important to me.
Yeah. That's great. So at what point during kind of all of this did you start to understand, oh, I really have a talent for this. This is something that I should pursue further. Was it around that time where you started taking voice lessons or?
Yeah, I mean, my friends in the girls ensemble in the youth choir used to tell me they joked that I should be an opera singer. Ha ha ha, you should be an opera singer. and so I guess that stuck with me. Apparently I heard them. And then I had took organ lessons too. It was sort of like, I had no choice but to go be a music major in college. And even the preacher's wife would give me feedback. She would say, you know, you're moving your head too much when you're singing. And, so they all wanted me to succeed. And even now, actually, every Christmas Eve, I go back and sing at my home church. I have to sing O Holy Night, and which I love, but it's a wonderful setting. But they've told me that even the teenagers there who never knew me growing up expect that to happen on Christmas Eve. And I got a lot of encouragement from the congregation.
Sure. That's wonderful. So, you know, it sounds like it was inevitable, but is there one thing that kind of led you to decide that you wanted to study singing as part of your education, and where did you end up studying?
Okay. So that I studied at Furman. I'm a Furman alum. And when it came down to choosing a college, my parents had gone to Mercer University. They actually met at Mercer, and I grew up in Macon, Georgia. And they thought Baptist colleges were the bomb, and that they were encouraging me to look at Baptist colleges. And a lot of them had great music programs. Stetson was out there, and Mercer and Samford. So I looked at all those places, but when I drove to the Furman campus with my very good friend, who it's such a small world. She was my good friend from second grade, and then we went all the way through Furman together. And then her son is a Furman singing alum. Her name is Laurie Douglas. She's also a very positive and inspiring person. And two of her sons have been in the Furman Singers. So it keeps going, you know. Just seeing the campus and knowing that I would have the opportunity to study either church music or performance drew me to Furman. And I just felt comfortable there. So here, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to study at Furman. And then when I got to Furman, I had great people influencing me and encouraging me.
That's great. So where did you go from Furman?
Oh, I went to Northwestern for my master's, and that was really exciting. I hadn't gone much out. I traveled a little bit out of the Southeast, but I've never been in a culture beyond the Southeast. But I enjoyed it so much and learned so much from the mentors there. It was a very intensive time, and I made great friendships there and was encouraged there as well. Had opportunities while I was performing there, and have great memories of the literature that I got to study there. And I still call that up when I'm teaching, because it was just a great exposure to excellent literature.
Yeah, great. Great. So did you have an idea at a young age what your career would look like and some of the things that you've done along the way? Or how has that evolved over time?
I had no clue. I was completely naive. It took me a long time to figure out what I would do. I remember I had to kind of fight to be a performance major at Furman. I don't know if fighting is the right word, but my teacher was very encouraging. I studied with Gail Schoonmaker, and she thought all along I should do that, but I didn't come in as that kind of a major. And so I really had to audition my way and really show that I was committed to the singing and grow. And she really guided me through that. So I always knew I wanted to sing, but I had this church music background. So when I went to Northwestern to get the performance degree, I realized how hard it would be to actually perform after you have a master's in voice. And my dad, as much as he encouraged me to sing, wanted me to have a job. So he asked me what I wanted to do after I had this master's degree. And I told him I thought that the best place for me to be would be Atlanta, because then there were bigger opportunities there than there would be in Macon. So I came home on a Sunday night, and he had signed me up for an interview with telemarketing for the Atlanta Symphony. So Monday morning, I had to drive up to Atlanta and interview for this telemarketing position. So that was my first rodeo, I guess you'd say, in Atlanta. That lasted a very short period of time, maybe a month. But it got me networking in Atlanta, and I auditioned for the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra Chorus, made a lot of connections there, reconnected to some mentors from high school, and got lots of voice teaching opportunities. And then I began working in churches. I actually worked in two churches at the same time.
Oh, wow.
I was the children's choir director at one Methodist church and the youth choir director at another Methodist church. And I only came to the wrong service at the wrong time once. but it was really, I had the skills, I'd built the skills even from high school in directing in those groups. And then those church choirs would have me sing. The one was Peachtree Road United Methodist Church, a really fine music program, and I got to sing lots there. And then I would audition for local opportunities. I sang with the Southeastern Savoyards when I was in Atlanta a little bit, and just whatever opportunity came along. And then after a couple of years, I heard about a job at a private high school, or middle school, high school, private school, and it was Pace Academy, and I applied for that, got that opportunity, and taught 7th through 12th grade music there for 9 years, and became their fine arts coordinator, and eventually hired a band director. They've grown their music program by reams since I was there. It was just a wonderful opportunity. And I got to perform in and music direct lots of musicals, about 10 while I was there.
Wow.
And I didn't have to do the drama directing. The theater director did that, but I got to do the music directing. And then when he needed an old person, meaning 20 or above, I would play the role. So I played the Mother Abbess in The Sound of Music, and I played Cousin Nettie in Carousel. but that was a great experience for me. I have pretty good organizational skills. I could plug in administrative skills and learn about budgeting and managing a budget and motivating kids to keep singing, and dealt with a lot of kids who were not completely focused on music but loved it. Had a few people who eventually majored in music in college, but most of the time we just did great musical things as well as we could when we were at Pace. So I really enjoyed that. And I interacted with a lot of great colleagues while I was there too. The elementary music teacher was astoundingly wonderful, an ORF specialist, and it was just a great training ground for me. I didn't get to do as much singing because I was working there full time, but it was a really good experience for me. And I did a lot of voice teaching of the high school students. So I learned a lot about the young voice, and it was always important to me that they be healthy singers. And that kind of led to my future career. So after I worked at, do you want me to keep going?
Sure. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. After I worked at Pace, I needed a little bit of a break. Some of my classes were really large, and just some things were changing. And so I took a break and opened my own private studio and taught people from middle school age to senior adults. And that was quite fun. and gave little studio recitals in my house and in churches, and it was great. And then an opportunity came to attend the Mozart Requiem at Furman with a friend. And so I drove up with this friend, and my former teacher, Gail Schoemaker, said, well, one of our professors is going on sabbatical, and don't you think you could commute from Atlanta to Furman? And I said, well, maybe. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, that's a really good opportunity. I should, sure, I should apply for that. So I auditioned for it. I gave a sample lesson, and then I substituted for your teacher, Trudy Fuller, the first year I was at Furman, and commuted from Atlanta. So I would come up to Furman on Thursday morning and go home on Friday night, and having intensely taught her very talented studio. And it was a real privilege. A lot of the students were cast in lots of productions, The Magic Flute. And so it was a wonderful experience for me. I taught some really talented people. Even your friend, Minda Larson, was in first year, and absolutely, quite a few talented people. So I had that great opportunity. And then the doors just kept opening for me to stay. So we finally moved here. So I wouldn't have to commute anymore. But I've been at Furman this will be my 23rd year this fall. And that makes me sound really old. I don't feel really old. But I've taught college voice. I never thought that was, I've always thought I was a decent teacher in life, but I never thought I'd be in a college setting. So it's been a real privilege for me to keep doing that. And then I said earlier that I mentioned earlier that my vocal health was interesting to me. And I don't really know why. I guess I was cared a lot about people's longevity. I think it may have been magnified when I taught at Pace, because we did musicals and we would rehearse really long hours. And some of them were heavily involved in talking, and they were theater people, and they took, I guess, vocal risks sometimes. And so it really mattered to me that they be healthy. And so I would always say, you know, you got to rest your voice and drink your water and that kind of thing. But it wasn't real relevant to me until I got to Furman, and I had a couple of students who had some vocal problems. So I encouraged them to go seek help, and they went to places like the Vanderbilt Voice Center, got some good advice there. And I spoke with Trudy Fuller, Dr. Fuller, and I said, what do you think I should do? Because I think I need to extend this part of my education. And I wasn't on a tenure track at Furman and didn't expect that door to open at all. So we batted around some ideas, but I eventually settled on the McCloskey Institute of Voice because it looked like something I could do in the summer and learn a little bit more about taking care of the voice. And that technique is very physiologically based, which was interesting to me at the time. And so I got certified in that and got very active in that organization, which I'm sure we'll talk about more later. After I'd done that for a few years, I was still interested in doing vocal health things and began to explore speech and language pathology, which is wonderful. And I went back to school to get a second master's in that. And it took me about 4.5 years because it was a part-time scenario, and I was still teaching at Furman. So I would take the classes during the school year, and then during the summer, I would do my practicum experiences. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to do it unless those practicum experiences could be mostly voice, which they, I went to the University of South Carolina, and they did a really good job of helping me, matching me up to people who were voice specialists in this area. And I actually still work with one of them as my colleagues, or a couple of them as my colleagues today. So it's wonderful. I get to treat people who have voice disorders and then build a healthy foundation with singers who are just starting their musical vocal journeys. That is my career.
So I can see why the girl from Macon couldn't have conceived of all of that, because that's a very winding path, but a lot of kind of interesting things, and it's interesting to hear how they fit together. So tell us, because I think this is important, because I think in, at least my understanding, in our region, there aren't a lot of SLPs that are based in singing, correct? So I think it's important for people to kind of know about that. Because there's a need, I think, for a lot of people to find somebody like that. So where do you practice? Do you have a practice?
Where I work at Greenville ENT, and we have 13 doctors in the practice who know about voice, but we also have a laryngologist in the practice who specializes in voice. And he does vocal surgery as needed. And he works really closely with the speech therapy team there. We often do voice clinic with him. So we'll see patients in clinic with him and find our role in helping the patient. He almost always encourages therapy before anything more extreme. And it's a real privilege to work with somebody who thinks that way and really appreciates what the speech therapist can bring to the table. And then when he has a patient who's a singer, he has a singing voice specialist person in the office ready to work. So, and you're right that that's not in every community, but it's a growing population. There are a lot of people who call themselves singing voice speech language pathologists. And then there are a lot of voice teachers who've taken the trouble to learn more about physiology, anatomy of the voice, and vocal health. And so they're, I think, referred to as singing voice specialists, mm-hmm. and or maybe vocologists. Dr. Ingo Tietze has a program out in Colorado where he trains people on vocal research and vocal health. So sometimes if you can't find a speech therapist who specializes in singing voice, you might be able to find a singing voice teacher who can interact well with a laryngologist and with a speech therapist to sure. meet whatever need you might have. And I do a lot. I have a teacher in Asheville that I've been coordinating with some. She's a vocologist. And we look for people that we can connect singers to, especially if they're not in our region.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Very helpful.
It's really very important. If you've never been scoped, it's a good idea, especially if you're healthy and when you're young and healthy, to go ahead and get your vocal folds visualized. Because sometimes we'll see very subtle differences and we don't know if there's no foundational exam. We don't know if they've always had a slight weakness and they're just dealing with some tension, or if it's a new neurologic issue or things like that. So I recommend that any young singer have their vocal folds visualized sometime when they're in college, I think is a good time to have that done.
I feel like we should have some sort of like street festival where we have just like a tent where everybody gets scoped.
Well, I do bring my vocal pedagogy class to the ENT clinic, and we offer them that if they want it. So, and I think that's not uncommon in other university settings.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So do you have a favorite career memory so far?
So singing wise, when I was in Atlanta, I got to sing with Robert Shaw in the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra chorus. So every moment in a rehearsal with him, performance with him was just, you just felt like you were surrounded by brilliance and the expectations of your musicality and your musicianship were very high. And you didn't want to do anything but give your best. So that's definitely a strong memory in my experience. I love choral singing. You and I sing in the Greenville Chorale together and the Herring Chamber Ensemble. And that's just a real privilege to me to make music in a choral setting. So that's definitely a highlight of my career. But I also had fun. I got to sing the solos in Carmina Burana with the Furman Choirs once. And that was really fun. We took it to the South Carolina Music Educators Convention. That was sort of a highlight for me. It was definitely an exciting experience. And then I also got to sing the solos in Dan Forrest's Requiem for the Living with him in the audience. Mm-hmm. And he was very gracious about that. So all of those have been kind of highlights of my singing.
Sure.
but I'm really a teacher at heart. I love singing, but I'm really a teacher at heart. So when I see my students succeed, that builds those memories that, you know, it reminds me of the times that we've hashed things out and worked through things, and then to see them be successful on YouTube or wherever is just really wonderful. And I think that those are the kind of musical memories I'll hold on to over the years. It's just great to see student success.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So were you a part of any of the Shaw like recordings that won Grammys? Are you a Grammy winner?
Yes, I'm a Grammy winner. Thanks for asking. I was on the Verdi Requiem and the Mozart Requiem. I think Belshazzar's Feast. There's a pool, Hindemith, when Lalique's Last Door of the Dooryard bloomed, just tons of excellent recordings. Tellart recorded them. It was just, I've always felt like I was in the presence of genius. Mr. Shaw would know the exact second that the piece lasted. His tempo setting was phenomenal. Yeah, so I'm a Grammy winner, a group Grammy winner.
That's amazing.
They gave us a sticker, not a trophy.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, I sang in my church choir in New York. I sang with a woman who sang with Mr. Shaw for a lot of those recordings, too. And she's told stories, and it sounds like some of those recording sessions were pretty intense. So
they were. We want.
You earned those Grammys, I feel like.
We did. And it was a real joy to get to celebrate the wins for those.
Yeah, that's great. So you mentioned a little bit ago, you are a trained practitioner of the McCloskey technique. Mm-hmm. Can you tell our listeners that might not be familiar, what is McCloskey?
Okay, so McCloskey was the name of a teacher. David Blair McCloskey was a baritone and a singer, and then a teacher in both Syracuse area and Boston area. And he had an incident in the 40s where he couldn't sing, and he had been gathering all sorts of important strategies for singing helpfully and efficiently. And so he sort of codified that. And in 1956, I think he wrote his first book called Your Voice at Its Best, where he put it on paper. It's a technique that teaches relaxation of six areas of the head and neck. For instance, your tongue, your jaw, and most singing teachers pay attention to that these days. But he put it sort of in an order. And if you do it in this order, it sort of takes you to a relaxed state. And then he also encouraged people to work on their alignment and find the balance points of the body so that they would have better access to the breath. And then engage the breath instead of these areas that are typically tense in singers. I have found it to be incredibly effective in both my own singing and in my teaching. It helps me better be a better teacher. Sorry, I stumbled over those words there. It helps me teach better. I listen better and I watch better because I know where those areas are typically tight. And when it's not COVID times, it's more hands-on. That's kind of intervened a little bit, but just teaches you to go a little deeper in a different direction. And so it's helped me in my own singing and in my own teaching. And then I think it helps choir directors. It's helped me with my patients, preachers, other public speakers who, one person who does a podcast, and she just was all over this about releasing tension. So I found it to be very effective. In my singing, you were asking about musical memories. I do have one moment that happened at a seminar, and this is why I probably followed up with the McCloskey technique. The first seminar I attended, I was in a small group, which is how we teach the techniques intensely. And I was kind of skeptical of it because I'm like, you know, I've had a lot of voice lessons. I don't need all this. But I was frustrated with my high G. It was bothering me. And so I thought, okay, I'll just try this. And in this small group, I was massaging somewhere while I was singing, and I saw all the eyes in the room just pop when I hit the high G. And I thought, oh, that's positive feedback.
Right.
In a good way. They were impressed, not shocked, you know.
Right.
But it really freed my voice. And that is one of the things, one of our mantras is we're looking for the freedom in the voice. And I love that your podcast is to find your best voice, because his book is Your Voice at Its Best. So that was really important to me that, oh, in my own singing, this can make a difference. And then when I came back and I started teaching some of it to my students, I felt like I needed more intense training. So that's why I got certified to do it. But you can, when you attend the seminar, you can learn quite a lot, because you get to work on yourself and then see other people being worked with and hear the differences it can make in other people's voices. So it's a really, it can be very dramatic for some people who carry a lot of tension, and then very enlightening to other people. And mostly, I think it's empowering, because the tools to release the tension are in your own fingertips. They're right there for you to own and feel and release.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So, you know, there are a variety of things that people study. I've studied Alexander technique some. Yeah. So this seems to differ in that it's based in singing. It comes out of singing, right?
It does. But McCloskey was, before there were speech therapists who specialized in voice, he did work with a lot of people in a, not technically therapeutic manner, because he wasn't a therapist, but it was before there were voice therapists. So he helped a lot of people. It's very good for releasing muscle tension. And oftentimes people have muscle tension dysphonia when they're patients of ours. So, yeah.
So is this something that would be useful even to people outside of singing, like teachers
absolutely.
That are speaking every day, or, yes. or people that are in heavy voice use
mm-hmm.
jobs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, exactly. It's really good. And as I've said, I treat a lot of preachers, actually,
right. yeah.
In my practice, and teachers come to, and so yes, it's very helpful to people who have to speak publicly.
Sure.
I find it to be really beneficial. People who speak frequently too, like even just salespeople, actors, it's very helpful yeah. for too. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's
good. Very interesting. So if someone is interested in learning more about McCloskey, yeah. how might they go about doing that?
Well, we have a website. It's www.mccloskey.org, and it's McCloskey. There's no E in McCloskey. And you can go to the website to look up when we have seminars. Our next one is actually in July at Furman, July 20 to 23, 2022, in case you're listening to this 2 years later on this podcast. And I've been tasked to say that we'll give you $50 off if you mention it, that you heard it in this podcast.
Oh, wonderful. Great. A podcast deal.
Yeah, podcast deal. It's July 20 to 23. And what we do is we alternate lectures with small groups. So you'll have a lecture about what the techniques are. Then you go work on those in the small group. Then you'll hear a lecture about anatomy and physiology, and you'll kind of incorporate, oh, well, that's what you mean by the swallowing muscles, or, you know, that's what my tongue looks like, and then work on that in the small groups. And then we also work on the speaking voice as part of the seminar. So if you feel like your speaking voice is struggling for some reason, then we work on helping you find your most efficient speaking voice. With the relaxation, we find that people become more resonant and more attached to airflow. So it's an amazing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds like it. That's great. So wonderful. All right. So now our lightning round questions.
Oh,
these are things that I ask everybody that comes on.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite singer? And it can be any genre.
Yeah, I love sopranos, and I'm a Renee Fleming fan, but who isn't? You know, well, I know there are a few people that are not, but I think she's wonderful. But I also loved Sylvia McNair when she sang with us in the Atlanta Symphony a lot. She sang at Mr. Shaw's funeral, and what a beautiful singer she is. Just so everything she uttered was always so heartfelt in those performances that we got to do with her. And there was another lady that sang with us one time, Janice Chandler, and she's kind of out there, but she sang with Shaw a lot, and just a stunning singer. So those are the people that I really enjoyed back in the day. And I, you know, any singer is great to me, because I don't know about you as a teacher, but I always listen for what do they have to offer, you know, professional or unprofessional or non-professional, amateur, professional or amateur. I just listen to what do they have to bring to the table, and how can I help them?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's wonderful. Do you have a favorite musical or opera?
Well, I loved Carousel. I mentioned that earlier. It's got a lot of depth to it for, you know, it deals with some really serious issues, as do a lot of those musicals, actually. But I loved teaching the music to that. And I also like Camelot. I like the old musicals, particularly because they have great choral ensembles, and it was fun teaching this.
Yeah, Carousel is actually one of the, when you study kind of the history of music theater, one of those kind of pivotal shows where, you know, before that, a lot of Broadway had been just kind of a pastiche of songs, right, or really kind of fluffy plots. And around the time Carousel came out, Oklahoma is another, are kind of those pivotal shows that came out that took on a more serious and dramatic kind of take that we have in kind of modern musical theater. So that's great.
But they always have a positive ending, unlike opera.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Usually there's not somebody dying at the end in a dramatic fashion. But if you could, speaking of dead, if you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, who would they be?
I mentioned my dad earlier, but he is one of the most one of the most gregarious people you could ever meet. Everybody loved him. But his father died when he was 16, when my dad was 16. And so I never met him. And I imagine that he would be equally gregarious. I don't know, but I'd like to meet him and ask him what my dad was like when he was a little kid. I think that would be fun to know. Yeah. That's just a personal thing. And then I would really like to meet McCloskey, because I have not met him. I have colleagues who studied with him, and they are still in our institute and guiding us to keep things going in his fashion. But I would have liked to, sit down and have a conversation with him. And then historically, you're going to think I'm such a lunatic, but I mentioned I'm a big fan of sacred music, and my faith is really important to me. I would really like to sit down with Mary Magdalene.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think that would be really cool to hear what she thought of the times and of Jesus.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, that would be quite a conversation with.
I don't know if all three of them would want to be at the same time.
That's something that keeps coming up when we discuss this. People kind of think of like three people, but then they're like, "Well, would it be all together? That would be kind of weird." So, but maybe sometimes the weirdest pairings are the most interesting. So,
sure.
Is there one book that's been really informative for your life?
I think actually, I'll hold it up for you, but Your Voice at Its Best actually has been very informative to me. I love to read, and I'm a fiction fan as well as a nonfiction fan, but that book I come back to all the time, partly because I have to, but his quotes, you know, it was written in the 50s. So his language is different from what we hear nowadays. My favorite line that he says when you start doing the McCloskey technique is to invite an untrammeled state of mind. And to me, that's a place that I don't get to very often.
Yeah, right.
Because we're always rushing around.
That's hard.
And that he encourages you to find that untrammeled state of mind. I think that's a lovely way to put it. And so some of his language is in there. And then there's also fresh language from other people who've added to the book.
Yeah. Great. That's wonderful. One piece of advice that current day Lisa would give to a younger version of yourself, and you know what age you would go back to give that advice?
Yeah, I do, actually. I would say ask more questions about future opportunities. That is not something I realized I needed to do. And I was, you know, always looking ahead, and I was a high achiever. I guess I wanted to win things and do auditions and do well, but I didn't see the full picture. And I don't know if I could have back then. I know that one of the things that I do with my students now is I make them write reports about their music they're singing, because I would just trust that my teacher was telling me everything I needed to know. I didn't do a whole lot of research myself back then, and I think that I should have owned that more. It wasn't as big a deal in the day, but I should have owned that more. Mm-hmm. So I would tell that to my 20-year-old self, because I would still be in school and I would do that research.
And that's a good time to make that a habit, right?
Right.
But it's always important at whatever level we're at to kind of take ownership of our art and don't count on a teacher or a conductor or a coach to kind of give you everything, because that's, you know, like we know because we teach people, and it's hard to give everybody everything they need in an hour a week, right?
That's very true.
There's a lot of personal responsibility that you have to take there too, to be successful, I think.
And I had peers who were doing that. I'm not going to tell you that wasn't taught at Furman. I was naive to it. I was still in sort of my church music and social world mm-hmm. at the time. You know, I just wanted to make friends and be in a place where I didn't feel like a nerd. In high school, I kind of felt like a nerd. And at Furman, I felt like I was part of the campus and, enjoyed that aspect of it too. So that was really important to me emotionally, to feel connected to my peers. But I didn't realize what educational opportunities I was missing. And, nobody can predict when a college student is in school how successful they will be. But I think it's important for that student to explore all the options. And I really just didn't know what was out there. Mm-hmm. So I would go back and see what my opportunities could be, and then set myself up a little bit better for that.
Sure.
Rather than just getting out and getting a job.
Yeah, sure.
Or getting married at the time when I was in college, that's what people did.
right, yeah.
Just got married.
Yeah. So give us your 5-song must-have playlist. Can be any genre. These are always interesting to hear people's perspectives.
Yeah, So, of course, I thought of classical songs.
Sure.
I am a sap. I love romantic music. I love a swooping melody. I love learning other kinds of music. I've sung a lot of contemporary art song, but my heart is in the swooping melodic lines from the romantic era. So, and I'm a big Rinaldo Hahn fan. Probably my favorite ensemble moment is the song that he's written is Le Namouré, where the piano just sings back with the singer. So I love any kind of collaborative music. So I'm a big Hahn fan. And then I like Del Cabello Más Sutil by Granados. And then for variety, because I thought I can't do all, I like Der Ohrkönig. And I love Jesse Norman's performance of that.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Yes, absolutely.
With the video. But the popular stuff that I like, because I thought, well, I got to throw in some pop stuff. I love sacred music. But I have two pop things that came to mind. And one is Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield. So I think that the lyrics to that are just so encouraging. And I have a 22-year-old son. So when he was in second grade, his teacher made them sort of a mixtape, all his class, a mixtape. And that was one of the songs on it. And so we played that tape a lot. I don't know if it was a tape then, maybe a CD, a lot. And I just thought, well, this is really a positive message, that you have your future in front of you. And it brings out lyrics that talk about creativity, but also inspire hope. So that's one of my favorite just positive message pop songs. And then I love to dance. So when I was a student, Earth, Wind & Fire was the band. And I still, if you put Earth, Wind & Fire on, I will dance. So those are my highlights.
At least before COVID, I think they were still touring. I think they still tour.
Yes. Oh, so. Yes. We saw them in Atlanta.
Yeah.
My husband is a big fan too. And it was really fun. They really get an audience moving. Yeah. And they have, I like the falsetto because I can sing along. It's like one of the pop groups I can sing with.
That's true. That's true. You don't have to worry about kind of screaming at a concert. Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, Lisa, it's been so great to hear from you and to hear a little bit about your story, to learn a little bit more about McCloskey technique. Like she said, if you mention you heard it on the podcast, you'll get a discount to attend. I encourage everybody to look into that. It's a great opportunity. Where can people find out more about you if they're looking to find out more about you?
Oh, well, I don't have a personal website. I'm on Facebook. I'm not very technological, as you know, but you can find me on the Furman website and on the Greenville ENT website. And then anybody is welcome to email me anytime. And Furman's probably the best place to do that. lisa.barksdale@furman.edu. And that I can be reached there related to Furman, or I can pass that on to ENT. And then I also can connect you to McCloskey that way too. So all of those options are excellent.
Great. Yeah. Well, hopefully some people will be hearing this and in need of a singing specialist, and they'll reach out to you. That'd be great. Whether they hear it in 2022 or 2024 or beyond, maybe. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thank you, Craig. I just wanted to say, if you don't mind, I'll say this too. It is such a privilege to work with you at Furman. We are colleagues in both teaching and singing, and you always set a positive tone, and you educate me often about new things. And I just have so much respect for what you do, and I really appreciate you inviting me to be on this podcast.
Well, thank you. That's what Find Your Best Voice is about, right? We're always kind of learning and adding to our toolkit from everybody around us. So that's what makes it so special. Well, thank you, Lisa.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Find Your Best Voice podcast. Make sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast. And for more information, be sure to follow at Best Voice Pod on Instagram or visit our website, bestvoicepod.com. We'll see you next time.